Welcome to the Rising Republic. I am L. Douglas Hogan, your host, your broheme, your brosif, your compadre, your amigo, your friend, your friendly neighborhood dude. I am the Commander-in-Chief of the Freedom Legion, and I am here today with Sarah F. Hathaway, and so I'm eager to get a hold of her, and we've been anticipating this phone call for a little bit, and she's a hard one to get on because she's got such a busy schedule. But with no further ado, we are at time's mercy, so let me give her a call.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Having a great day.
I hear. I understand you got a new toy.
Yes. Brock spoiled the heck out of me today.
It's not a secret, right? I don't want to spill the beans on anything, but I haven't shared anything. I'm leaving that for you. So if you want to let the cat out of the bag and tell me what, tell the listeners what you got today.
Yeah, so Brock spoiled me with a new Tavor today. I've wanted that gun for about 7 years and finally picked one up today. So I'm so excited to get out to the range and shoot it. It's going to be epic sauce for sure.
Now, that's the equivalent of a TAR 21, right? An Israeli
correct.
Auto rifle.
Yep.
Shoots IWI. 5.56, right? Does it shoot the same thing? I can't remember if it shoots the same thing as our standard 5.56 that we use over here in our AR-15s.
Correct. Yeah, it shoots a 5.56 or the 2.23, but the 5.56 is, you know, preferred for sure.
That's really cool. So what you got then? Because you got an AR-15, at least one, right?
Right. Yeah. And so going out on the range with it, it's just more of a challenge for my small frame, because everything is out so far, right? And I even do a lot of forearm training to make sure I'm strong enough to hold it. But to be able to walk around with it all day, the Tavor is the bullpup option. And so everything just sits back so much better into my body. It's so comfortable to hold.
I see, because you sent a picture of it. It's like half your body size almost. So I don't know how. I think a lot of it is what is that plastic? It's like a polymer of some kind that's really lightweight.
A lot of it is polymer. Yeah, polymer plastic.
You know, and it's funny because when you break those kind of weapons down and you get down to, I've never opened up a Tavor before, so I don't know what, have you cracked it open to see what the inside of it is? Does it have like gas operated like an AR-15 M16?
No. Well, yeah, it is actually. When you open up the back and the trigger mechanism comes out of the bottom of like the stock area, mm-hmm. but the bolt and all that is through the back of the stock, it comes out. But, so to like clean it and field strip it, it all comes out the back of it.
Okay, but the meat of the rifle itself, it's just a frame, right? It's just
correct.
It's funny because every time, you know, you if you were to take this picture and put it up on Facebook, I know you don't have a Facebook account, but if you were to throw it up on Facebook and say, hey, look, this is what I got, and everybody would be scared, all the lefties would be scared to death of what you are holding. Like, you got this weapon of war, you have no business weapon of war. And it's funny because when you do the same thing with the M16, an AR-15, you know, an M4, any kind of Colt style rifle, you break it down and it looks like a little, like, I don't want to be like an Ethiopian kid that hasn't had any food.
Many of the hunting rifles are way more powerful and everything than a sport gun like that. So, but I am going to take it out and hunt some hog with it just to have some fun.
Just to have some fun, because you got hog in where are you located?
In Texas.
Okay, I didn't want to disclose that.
And I have a friend who has property in West Texas, and they were just getting overrun by the hogs out there. So they need people to come out and clear them out. So I'm more than happy to oblige.
You ever gone have you ever gone on like on a chopper? Like the musician?
No.
I'm having a brain fart.
I asked my dad, I was like, father-daughter trip. We'll go do the helicopter with the 50 cal to shoot hogs. And he was like, no, we're not doing that. I'm like, come on. That's definitely on my bucket list for sure.
Ted Nugent. Have you ever seen his videos?
No.
You got to go look them up. I don't even know if they're on YouTube, because
I love some of his songs for sure.
Oh yeah, he's got good music, but he is a extremely, like, he's really right wing. Very, prolific very, hunter. Yes. Yeah. And he records these, and he'll do an overkill thing too. But just besides that, just while we're on the Ted Nugent thing, and then we're going to get to, I probably should have done an introduction on you first before we start talking about all the good stuff. But I figure, I've been on your show 500,000 times. So all your listeners definitely already know who you are. But Ted, I almost said Ted Cruz, Ted Nugent, he's very, very anti COVID vaccine, as am I. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I've seen a video of him being interviewed by somebody, some media host, and they're like, "So what are you saying? Are you saying that everybody who's taking the COVID vaccine is stupid?" And he said, "I can answer that for you very easily." He says, "Yes, and let me say, bah.
Right. One of my favorite words of wisdom from Ted Nugent was him talking about, okay, so you're going to get mad at me for hunting a deer who lived in its natural environment, and these vegans who aren't going to get eat meat, you're yelling at me for hunting and eating meat and doing these things. Yet when you go to grow the tofu that you're going to eat to get your protein, they have to literally clear cut that whole section of land. So every single animal, rodent, anything living on that swath of land has to go for your tofu field.
Yeah, you're killing animals by proxy anyway.
Exactly. So tell me which one's better, And I really love that take on it, because a lot of times, like with the electric cars, they don't think about, okay, where does the lithium come from? Where do the batteries for these windmills, where does it all come from? And the destruction that's done to our earth to harvest those things is astronomically worse than getting oil out of the earth. So I think we have to do some real reevaluating on our green energy, so to speak.
Yeah, because I saw a meme yesterday, and it made me think, because I never saw it before or even heard the school of thought, but it showed a bald eagle that I guess had got hit in a wind turbine, mm-hmm. to create green energy. And the eagle's laying dead on the ground, and there's a picture of it. And the meme said, if this was a duck covered in oil, there'd be outrage.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So you got one form of energy, which some could debate, if what the best form of energy is. Remember the oil spills and the ducks and how they used Dawn and all that to clean it up with. And then you got the clean energy that's killing. And this isn't one case, one incident. This is happening all over the United States, because these giant wind farms are killing damn near extinct birds like American bald eagles.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, there was a whole section actually in this one area of California where they had built all the windmills in there, and they had to take it down because that was the same way the birds were using, and it was literally just slaughtering them by the thousands. So, but I mean, the lithium's even worse. So you got to go 500,000 tons of dirt to get to the lithium, which is all done with diesel tractors. And then they take the lithium out, and they have to leach it in these huge, it looks like cornfields of this green toxic sludge. They have to leach it through water. So they have to use all that water supply when they could be growing rice or whatever in those fields, mm-hmm. And they have to leach all this stuff to a certain purity of lithium. So when it gets really, really yucky green looking, that's when they know that the lithium is ready to harvest. And they have these massive fields of all this going on. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, green energy. It's not. The lithium is really bad when you see what they're doing to the planet. And then the cobalt and things like that, the amount of people that are in slave labor harvesting that from the earth is really, really sad. So that, we can have the next iPhone or whatever. It's really, really sad situation. Most people would rather just put their head in the dirt than realize, all of the toys and the next best thing that we want, what the cost is of that to not only other people, but also to our planet. So
it kills me that liberals have all these utopian ideas of how they can make the world a better place, how they can save the world. But all they're doing is trading one form of of this for another form of that. You know, the robbing Peter to pay Paul.
And it has to be a money-making option. Like a lot of the really good ideas that are very, very clean and wouldn't, you know, vehicles run on water, they're not going to go for that because it's not something that can make them money long-term. So we need to really start, you know, reevaluating that. Yeah.
And it's like the healthcare system too in big pharma because, you know, there ain't no money in curing cancer.
Right. Or healing people. You need them to be return visitors.
I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have found a better way of living and found better health just through taking herbs and different things, you know.
Yep.
That
no, I God believe there's us. A place for both.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
There's some things that Western medicine's really good at. You know, you're having a heart attack, you don't need herbs for it.
Right.
But when you're having normal issues with your body, they look at just the symptoms you're experiencing instead of the whole body and what's really going on with your whole system. And they're just targeting that one thing, plus the pharmaceuticals are usually something that they found in nature that they're now man-making. And when you find it in nature, usually it comes with all these buffers for your body that are really good for your body. And the medicine might not be as potent, but it's still getting you to the same place. Plus it is working in conjunction with your body instead of pulling out that one thing that's gonna target that one system and then just rail upon all your other systems while it's doing that one thing. Now you need medication to fix those other side effects, and it's a vicious cycle.
That's why I've noticed, like my, I'm 51 tomorrow, and every once in a while, this never used to happen to me. I used to, because now I turn red a lot, and I can tell when my face is heating up, my ears are getting hot, that my blood pressure has come up a little bit.
That's because you're doing Swenson's lines.
You're probably right. We'll talk about that here pretty soon here. But I've looked up the blood pressure medicine, and it comes with like 1,500 side effects.
Yes.
It's like, no, thank you. I'll exercise, you know.
Exactly. Oh, and there's something to be said for that big time as we age. We have to stay active because, you know, anybody I've seen that's in seriously good shape as an elder person has never given up their exercise regimen.
This is a good segue into what you write about and the audio drama that you do, that you script out, and that many yourself and myself and many others have contributed to is health and fitness, because I've seen so many people, you know, preppers and survivalists that they couldn't walk 15, 20 miles. They couldn't throw on a backpack with any significant weight and walk any degree, you know.
Yes, amen, brother.
You know what I'm saying? So survival is more than canning. It's more than saving things and you know, being able to make your own bullets and saving rounds and storing food and keeping and dry, you know, dehydrating your own food. It's more than all of that. It's also physical fitness. And I think it's a huge element that people completely forget about if you're going to survive in an end time apocalyptic event is your physical health, because we're talking at some point, even if we're not talking about EMP, let's say an EMP does go off, right? We lose our vehicles or an EMP doesn't go off. We go into martial law, martial rule, where all the gasoline and all the petroleum products are seized by the government and we no longer have access to those things. We're going to be footing it everywhere we go.
Yes.
And
not only that, but like we're very, very spoiled with our lifestyle right now. Even if you just took away electronics and people went outside to start gardening again or doing anything that is physical on their body, they're going to find out real quick that they have not been in shape, you know, for a long time. And it takes time to do. This is not something you can do overnight. You know, it takes a lot of time to sculpt your body. And then, God forbid you're in a self-defense situation where your adrenaline goes through the roof and your body's no longer giving your muscles those warnings about what it can and can't do. You're not going to be able to do anything the next day. Forget about protecting your family the next day, because you'll be so sore that you won't be able to move pretty yeah. much.
And where do you find your potassium and all this other stuff? You know, all these things are provided to us in the earth, in the world. And those kind of minerals help our muscles to replenish, right? And to stay physically right. fit, besides the protein and stuff when they begin to break down and stuff. But I start talking about that because your book one in your series, you write a whole series of what do you tell me, gee, is there 7 books or 8 books real quick?
So there's 8 books in the Changing Earth series. And then there's 2 side novels. So everybody loved to hate Swenson so much. He got his origin story. And then one of the main soldiers, Cole Vergis, he got his origin stories, mainly because I had the content from the audio drama. But the Changing Earth series is an 8-book series from start to finish of the story of Erica Moore, who's basically the Spartacus figure for the climate refugees as the world begins to deteriorate and people have to figure out how to not only survive with each other when there's less land, but how to survive when the earth is against them instead of working for them.
Right. And book one being day after disaster.
Right. It is the day after it happens.
Can you give us kind of like a back of the book synopsis? I know people can find you on Amazon, but just for our listeners who may be driving down the road or whatever, because I can go into your Google page or your Amazon page.
My website, changingearthseries.com. Uh-huh. Everything is there, changingearthseries.com. You're going to find everything there. But day after disaster, basically, Erica is down at work in Sacramento, California, and her house is up in the foothills. And when the earthquake happens, it ruptures the dams, and she is trapped in Sacramento. And she doesn't know if her family survived up in the foothills. So it's her survival story home to see, did my family survive? And then once she arrives back home, it becomes a question of, do I turn around and help the people who helped me because now they're in danger? Or do I take care of myself and move on? So she's really faced with that ethical dilemma towards the end. And then what, you know, I don't know, spoilers, but and then the what happens to California from there.
Right. There has to be some kind of conflict in every story that is written to keep the reader going.
Absolutely. And I'm all about the action scenes. I love action. So a lot of times I have to slow down to, you know, really bring out those characters and bring out their qualities. But I love writing action. So it just sucks you right into the story. And then I write a ton of survival fact in with my fiction. So you're actually learning at the same time as you're digesting the story. Because I think people just learn better that way. So if you're ever in the situation, you're like, oh, Erica did it this way, I can do that too. And that's what I really wanted people to be able to take away from it.
I've noticed that when you do that, you're doing it most of the time in a dialogue. You'll have your characters are communicating back and forth to each other, explaining like why they're doing it this way. And I know that you're writing that so the reader or listener in the vein of the audio drama can learn because that character is teaching another character, but is also teaching the reader.
Right. TJ and Mr. Lee have that series where Mr. Lee is like, we need more chlorine. And TJ's like, we need to find a pool store. We need to get the taps, the chlorine taps. Oh, yeah, because they store longer than, you know, the liquid bleach or the liquid chlorine, which is absolutely correct. You should be stocking the chlorine tabs rather than the liquid chlorine. So, yeah, I love sliding that kind of stuff in, you know, as the survival tip of the day so that you're actually getting beneficial material out of it.
I also noticed that you have, because you talked about violence, fighting and action scenes and stuff like that in your story. I noticed that there's young adult edition that you have for Day After Disaster.
Right.
What is different? Is.
So that one, I have some adult scenes in my stories, especially when I first published my book, I had, you know, a little bit more graphic love scenes going on. And then there is a very important rape scene that happens in the story. And it's an absolutely essential scene, but I soften the heck out of it for the young adults version so that they could have a copy of it that was wholesome. And not going to, you know, present encounters that maybe they're not old enough to really read through yet. So I wanted to definitely put that version out. And I have since republished the whole book as well. And so a lot of that has been softened as far as like graphics, scenery of the specific situations.
I know that as an author myself, that some of the most difficult stuff that I've had to write was doing stuff like that, because when you're writing in a post-apocalyptic world, you put yourself in those situations, those scenarios. And a lot of times I find myself, I sometimes I write outlines, but in the middle of those outlines, I'm writing organically. And sometimes I write my character into situations I got to fight out of. And sometimes things get rather brutal. And other times my characters find themselves in scenes that are not savory to write about. And sometimes it does bother me as a writer to have to pin those things out. But you got to think about, in an apocalyptic event, these are things that are real. These are the things that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. When I first put together Day After Disaster, I never intended on publishing it. It was just for fun, just a creative story that I was putting together. And so it was really my thought experience, my brainstorming of, okay, if I was down here, because I was going to school at Sac State at the time, Sacramento State, and I was like, if I was down here and something happened, how would I get home? So Erica is kind of the pseudo me in the respect that it was really my brain exploration of ethically walking myself through situations that you might come across once there's no laws.
Who is on your side, PBN family? When it comes to healthcare, I know no better ally than the folks at the Wellness Company. They've been our sponsor now for months, and I want you to look at their monthly membership. Visit twc.health/PBN. For $10 a month or less, your membership gets you discounted supplements and wellness products, discounted virtual care, and discounts on most specialty telehealth services. I'm talking allergy immunotherapy, freedom from pharma, vaccine injury. These people get it. They get you, and they are the future of healthcare. Visit twc.health/PBN.
So tell us a little bit, because your character, Erica Moore, she has a husband.
Yes.
And who plays his voice in the audio drama?
So I play Erica, my husband plays Vince, and then my kids play the kids. So we are the family affair.
I just wanted to throw that out there, because I think it's kind of neat how you incorporated your family into these roles. So you're writing these characters that are played by your family.
Yes. Yeah, they literally are, you know, family. My family is everything to me. I could give up any dream that I have. I've been so blessed by the Lord with these wonderful, wonderful individuals in my life. And so they are absolutely 100% everything to me. So when I'm walking through my stories, I definitely couldn't leave them behind. So they've got to come right with me, even though TJ's character would rather that Vince wasn't in the picture. So
so TJ. TJ is the person that everybody loves to hate.
Yes.
He, and I've referred to him when I talked to you as the Negan from The Walking Dead of the Changing Earth. Series.
Yeah, but he never gets wussified like they wussified Negan. He will never go down that road.
And he probably, yeah, you're probably right. He never would. But even, you know, when Negan first is introduced into the Walking Dead series, the Walking Dead series is all based off a comic book. So Negan was, I mean, everybody, all the fans of The Walking Dead knew that Negan was coming. They just didn't know when he was going to be introduced into the television series.
Right.
But he came as a strong leader. And right. He was doing in his own mind what he thought was right.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And TJ's character is different than Negan, because Negan was doing, when he killed those main characters, it was more for shock and awe. TJ is actually a control freak. He doesn't like to kill people. He'd rather bring you home and psychologically destroy you and make you his.
This
so
is
now
true.
You're his pet forever.
True. But both characters, I love debating this with you, because I feel invested in Swenson now. I feel that both characters have a doctrine that they live by, and that is that people are resources.
Yes.
Even Negan, who did the head bashing with his baseball bat who had a name.
Swinson
has a dogma also. His doctrine is, you know, he has some shock and all too, but his is more, I'm going to hit you with Sheila, which is the name of his whip.
Right.
Okay. So he won't kill people for shock and all, but he will beat them near to death for shock and all.
Correct. Yeah.
Because he still sees them as a resource.
And then parade them around in front of everybody else so that you can see what happens if you come against him.
Because he believes that humiliation is a good teacher.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Swinson, yeah, go ahead.
He's very much the yin to the yang, right? So Erica was so powerful as a freedom fighter and just kind of, she's very much supported by this network. So she's able to just kind of like do her thing naturally, right? There's always somebody to really support her so she can just be natural at what she does and just let her energy flow rather than all the specifics. Whereas Swenson's like, I need to control every aspect and harness everything for the power that it can give me. Very much a very simple character. He doesn't like a lot of lavish anything. He just really loves the power of being able to be that person who's in control of all the people.
Another big difference between Swinson and Negan is that Mr. Swinson not only does he has a love, and he's able to love and to feel love where you don't really see that in Negan. You just see he has emotions for, like, he sensed there's something. They wussified him. Where,
they did.
Right.
They did.
Where Swinson is not wussified in the same sense.
No, his, and he does have, so as a Christian person, I guess I should say, there was certain aspects to his character that I wanted to keep identifiable. Right. So I wanted people to understand he was human trafficked as a child. He was raised to be that way and never really knew anything else. So he was literally crafted into the machine that he is now, and never really revolted against. I don't want to give any spoilers. So he was always fine to be in the position he was in because he was really thankful that he was taken off the street and given this opportunity to grow into this guy. So he's actually really thankful to be there. And so with young children, he's very, very kind. He believes he can craft them into the same type of machines and things like that. So it's not that he is, he just will make sure if you go against him that you will never do that again, because he knows best, basically.
There's so. One person, one exception out there that can get away with such a thing. And when he came off the streets as, in the child trafficking thing, he ended up in as a caretaker for a man by the name of Mr. Lee.
Right. Yeah. Mr. Lee is the one that his bodyguard, Chuck Laudner, found TJ, brings him in. And so Mr. Lee basically adopts him, carves his initial in the kid's back and puts him to work in the gym for him, and then raised him up to be this bounty hunter. But yeah, Mr. Lee is still the man with the hand on the switch. So it's actually more Mr. Lee's fault than anything, I would say.
I'm kind of seeing, because as you read through the story and listen to the audio drama, you can see that Swinson's almost the gun and Mr. Right. Lee is the wielder.
Yes, but they always give the image of TJ as the one in charge, even though that's not actually the case.
And it doesn't have to be, because if you've ever been in any kind of management position, I mean, every manager or supervisor, administrator, whatever, has people working under them that make them look good, right? It's like the administrator is always the one that gets the credit for it.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. So yeah, that was a fun, it just kind of, this, his story just kind of fell in that way through crafting it. He really, his character really created his own story. He originally entered Dark Days in Denver. That's book 5 at the very end. And then Battle for the South is all the TJ Erica battle. Or no, not Battle for the South. I'm sorry. Endless Night. That's like book six. So
let's look here at book. Because I kind of want to go talk about, I don't want to talk about each book necessarily, but just kind of throw the names out there. Book one, we've already said, is Day After Disaster.
Yes, yep.
Right? Book two is Without Land, right?
Yep, and that's the story of Erica and FEMA camp, basically. And then
because they're trying to rebuild, right? Like immediately after the Day After Disaster, FEMA is doing its job because it stands for what? The Federal Emergency Management Agency. And so they're setting up these camps and trying to reestablish order and give people housing and food and water and all this other stuff, correct?
Right. So we just lost all the coastlines. The Mississippi River formed in the Mississippi Sea. So you can't have people just running amok when they just lost everything. They would be at war with the people who have stuff still. So they rounded them up into FEMA camps to be able to manage the feeding and the care for all these people who were just made homeless, basically.
And book three is called The Walls of Freedom.
Correct. And Walls of Freedom is, you know, obviously Erica wasn't too happy with being in a cage. So they take, there's things that set them off that they go on this mission and re-enter society. That's when she really becomes the voice of the resistance.
Tell us a little bit about the resistance without giving away any spoilers.
So the resistance is the mercenary forces are all of our private defense companies that we have in the United States, really set up as a counterbalance to the federal government's forces, which were, you know, the Navy, the Marines, everything was folded back into one unit called the Federal Forces. Because we lost too much. We had to just organize them into one cohesive unit. But then the private defense contracting companies were helping the feds at the beginning, you know. But as time ticked on and this two-tiered society really started getting set up, they went, you know, we just can't stand by. And it's 9 years later. We are treating these people like slaves. They're Americans. We fought overseas for them. We can't just like go along with the slavery system anymore. We want to go back to the Constitution. So the private defense companies, they needed a face for the resistance. They needed that person who could tell their story. And it was so horrific because Erica's family, they start the infertilization program. The government does. All of the climate refugees are infertilized at the age of 13. So Erica, her husband, and the two oldest children are all infertilized. And then they find out that Vince's parents are still alive and they should have never been in the FEMA camp. So now she has this story of she's always been rebellious. She has this story of she shouldn't have been infertilized. She was a landowner. And so it gives them that real face of the resistance. And so in Walls of Freedom, that's when she first shows her face. She goes on trial for her past discrepancies. And she uses it at that moment to really bring back the Constitution and fight for the individual freedoms of every American citizen again.
And you mentioned the United States and American citizens there, like, but we lost a lot of people in the Great Quake. And
right.
And looking at the map, because can I talk about how the United States broke down quite a bit. We lost a lot of California. We lost a lot of just to the Midwest or maybe the west of the eastern states, and right. Everything was regionalized into seven regions. Correct.
And yeah, there's the native lands up there, but yeah, the north, south, the central region where the new capital is in by Kansas, the Appalachian region, and then the West, and then Badlands.
Right. I got the map pulled up now. I did that map for you. The whole middle of the United States, it looks like I'm trying to remember Ogallala Lake. Yes.
So the Ogallala Reservoir is actually a reservoir that stretches from the Panhandle of Texas all the way up into Nebraska, and in my stories because of the Great Quake. It's actually very porous limestone under there. And we've been taking water out of that reservoir for so long, it's starting to create this gap. So when the Great Quake happens, that all falls in and it creates this huge lake in the center of the United States called the Ogallala Lake.
And how many FEMA camps would you say, did you plot it out? Because I know you put a great amount of detail into your stories, and even if you didn't write it out on paper, you got it pinned out on notes.
There's Minneapolis is one. They just walled up the city. Bozeman is another one. Basically, they walled up the city. That's for the western region. Las Vegas is the biggest refugee camp that there is. And then there's another one that comes up in Illinois because there's a nuclear disaster there in Illinois. And then Texas went free. They seceded from the United States after the Great Quake because they wouldn't go along with the refugee adoption program. So they secede from the United States. And, it's still freedom reigns down there. They trade oil to the United States in order to have, food and some things like that that they're in need of. But, so there's no FEMA camps down south.
Where did, at what point did the FEMA camps kind of graduate or transition into refugee camps?
They started building them. The walls were initially put up because of the chaos. So they needed to keep the people inside safe, right? But at the same time, those people inside were walling themselves in. And then once, probably 5 years later, they start the infertilization program. That's when you start to see some of the big riots at the refugee camps because they're obviously not too thrilled about that. So it was just a walk-in system that way. And then Walls of Freedom is actually 9 years later. So it's pretty in stone. They've had it in the works for a decade now of adopting families out to these landowners for factory labor, farm workers, that kind of thing.
What if I told you could own land for $200 down and highly affordable monthly payments? Yourcheapland.com is your answer to bug out land, hunting, recreation, and whatever else your prepper mind can dream up. Yourcheapland.com has properties in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, Arizona, Utah. Go to yourcheapland.com, check out the properties, use the promo code PBN, and get $100 off your purchase.
Well, with the advent of the World Economic Forums and all that that started back in the 1970s, they've graduated they've had so many actors, like elite organizations, elite people, actresses, actors, rich people, you name it. Every year they show up to these forums and these conferences, and they try to come out with new ideas on how to save the earth.
Right.
One of the babies of this these meetings was Agenda 21, which is now Agenda 30 because Agenda 21 didn't happen. So now we're calling Agenda 30. It's on the United Nations website.
15-minute cities, right?
What's that?
The 15-minute cities.
Well, there is a big push to move people into cities, which is not where I'm going because that's a whole other thing. The whole cities thing is just because you can look around at all the liberal-run cities right now and see that they're a huge failure.
Right.
I don't know how they think that pulling people into cities is going to work out anything. But I was going to ask what your take is on, because one of the main things with the whole let's balance the earth thing is the population. And they never, ever talk about population, or at least overpopulation or depopulating the earth in these meetings. But they always do talk about, they talk about balance with nature. Balance is a word that they use. Sustainable development is a buzzword that they use, which is basically a catchphrase for, utilizing equal amounts of resources that the earth gives us. So the earth puts out resources and we consume an equal amount. That's the balance. And as you know, the Georgia Guidestones that were destroyed a couple of years ago, there was a mention on there for a population cap perpetual, 500 million.
Right.
And again, the word balance was used to bring perpetual balance to the world. So what's your take on, do you think some natural some disasters like what happened in your storyline has to happen for the earth to start pushing for infertilization programs?
Nope, because China already did in fertilization programs, and those actually didn't work out too well. You know, because people only wanted boys. They could only have one child. Now you got a bunch of spoiled boys running around. So I think that people are already thinking that way. Hitler, the eugenics projects he put into effect were actually mirrored off what they were doing in San Francisco and New York at the time. So I think that people have been concerned as far as that goes for a while. I do believe that Mother Nature is, you know, God put us on a planet that is alive and gave us our mother. And we are just a speck on this planet. And if she needs to take care of a population, she's more than capable of doing that. So I do have those beliefs deep rooted. What I think would be like, what could pull us out of the funk that we're in as a society, as a world, without killing each other? Because, I mean, unfortunately, there's always a disaster before humanity has its next big growth. So you can look at the Dark Ages before the Renaissance era, right? Mm-hmm. So there's always this horrific dark time before the brightest light comes. What I do think could bring us out of it without having a disaster like that, by my all druthers, we need to move back to nature more. We need to incorporate our technology with our natural environment and learn to work with our earth much better. But I think having a focus for people, whenever we work together, we do a really good job. So even if it was like the space race where we were countries racing against each other to see who could get a man to the moon the fastest, you know, that was a great period of innovation and peace between one another, even though I know the Cuban Missile Crisis happened in there and stuff. But still, if you look at like the humans are explorers, and we think we've run out of things to explore, and our brains are these huge environments where we don't even know the potential of our brains and where we're going to go as a species. But also, space is there. And I really think it's time that we start having missions as a planet to send people to Mars and to do these things and to keep exploring and to keep that juice really alive, where we're working with each other to be able to reach our next big destination. But, you know, people get wrapped up in material items and in emotions, and they don't want to think as a you know, an individual working for a common goal. And so it's really sad to see how much anger is just out there in the world, just dripping with anger and hatred. Is really sad to see. So hopefully we can pull our heads out before that happens. But I do think I watch a lot of space news. I study a lot of suspicious observers. It's this gentleman, Ben. He's an amazing scientist. And I do think we are due for our next Earth disaster before 2040. So we really need to be prepared and be harmonious with our planet so we can survive as a species and adapt and work together instead of, you know, beat each other up while everything gets rough.
Yeah, I think, you know, and what is necessity is the mother of invention, they say. And
right.
That being said, I agree with you. You know, I would love to, you know, explore. I mean, the Starlink system is out there now, and for the first time ever, I've actually considered getting an internet plugged into, you know, the Starlink system, because I've read the reviews on it and it's really good. And it's about the same price but faster as some of the cheaper stuff that I have access to now. But also, we have not even explored our own planet.
Right.
There's so much that we can do here. I mean, we could do it simultaneous, but it's very important, I think, that we utilize. I saw a video, and I don't know how accurate it was, but I guess some form of science went into it. They crammed 8 billion people shoulder to shoulder into one space on the planet Earth, and it filled up. I think, I want to say it was the state of Michigan.
I was thinking the same thing. They gave, and even if you gave like everybody a 1 acre plot or something like that, it would only fill up Texas.
Right.
So, I've heard the statistic that it's like not nearly all this is just for control.
It is.
And they're just trying to fill our heads with fear so we can be controlled.
It's all about control, which all this comes down to. I mean, everything, your story, the stuff I write about, the stuff that's happening in the world, it's all about control. But yeah, I do believe we should explore our own world, or the deserts we have, the oceans we have. I mean, we could, I mean, if we're already thinking about, you know, putting or sending people to Mars, you know, why aren't we thinking about building cities in the bottom of our own oceans and our seas, you know?
Right.
That's more plausible, and it could happen much faster because it's going to take thousands, tens of thousands of years to seed Mars, to build an atmosphere.
Right.
But here, you know, on our own planet, we have everything that we need already.
And it's really a shame, too, because if you look at history, when people are most productive and most innovative is when they're free to do that without controls. Right. And unfortunately, you know, it's just people with power get more power, and then they want it all. And so, you know, but I mean, that's what the Bible says has to happen. So, you know, we'll just have to be along for the ride and saying our prayers.
That's what I appreciate about people like Elon Musk who made the electric car and gave the blueprint out, said, here you go, you know, and made it so that anybody could.
Nikola Tesla. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing man. Yeah,
exactly. So this is not a guy he's not a government official, right? He's just a genius, billionaire who's done these things. And now he's got an entire satellite. He's an entrepreneur. He's a moneymaker. He's a businessman. And he's got these satellites in space. Space ain't nobody's domain. It doesn't belong to China. It doesn't belong to America. It doesn't belong to Russia. It's nobody's. It's whoever gets there and puts something in it, you know? But as far as, you know, making things right, going back and touching on what you were saying about pulling our heads out of our butts, and I'm paraphrasing, and learning to get along and do things together, there's two major barriers and one minor barrier, I think, that needs to happen, or that we need to overcome before any of those things can happen. One is we have an economic issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because for years, the United States dollar was the standard, and now China and Russia are trying to pull their weight and make another standard, okay? So we have an economic standard, and we have a religious boundary. There will never be peace on this earth as long as there are religions that are warring. Never. Because...
Which is so silly. I mean, because, like, when you go back to grassroots of most of everything, it's all the same. And so I don't understand why people have to fight over their nuances of what goes on there.
Well, it comes down to ideologies. Muslims, for example, if they're reading the Quran and they're taking it at face value, because they don't have an Old Testament, New Testament like we do, because they blame Christians for being violent, but yes, they were in the Dark Ages because we didn't have our Bibles. It was kept from us. Bibles, the written word is kept from us, and so we were only told what the Bible said. And then the Bible in the Old Testament said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you know, to do these things to stone people. And, you know, yes. So we had an early violent whatnot. But the Quran, if you want to take it literally, tells you to rape and cut off the heads of the non-believer and all this other stuff. So you got these extremists who make up a small percentage of Islam, but a small percentage is 100 million people that are extreme. That makes the other 300 million, I think, that is left as, and that's a cap. That's the most I can think. It's like 150 to 300 million peaceful Muslims. It makes them irrelevant. Like they don't matter because it's the violent ones that we got to pay attention to now. Yes, they're the instigators.
Yep, just like the outliers in media.
Yeah. And there you have it. You got, and then the third, which is a minor thing, is language. It's a minor barrier, but English is quickly becoming the language of the world, and Spanish is probably, I would say, a secondary.
Secondary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Spanish is offered in almost every high school now when you're going, you know, and then in English is required in almost every country.
Right. Yeah. there is a lot of, I was thinking Chinese, like Mandarin.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, they are all learning English over there as well, so that they can understand the language of the world, basically. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I always look back to like the Tower of Babel when everybody was trying to, you know, build the tower to go see God, right? And God was like, nope, I'm gonna just, everybody's got different languages and you all got different religions. And
well, the reason why he did that to them and confounded their language was because they had just, they had just replenished, started to replenish the earth again after a major flood that killed all the earth, right? Except for Noah and his family.
Right.
And so they had it in their heart they were going to save themselves in case God was ever flood the earth again.
Right.
Remember, God made a promise he would never flood the earth again, but people don't care about that. They only cared about, hey, we're going to save ourselves. And every time you try to save yourself, God has to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to knock you back down again.
Uh-huh.
Because we cannot save ourselves.
Well, see, and that's why I'm hoping that there would be a divine intervention before anybody got stupid enough to hit a button on one of those nuclear weapons. So, you know,
yeah, there's small things written in scripture, specifically in the book of Revelations, that you could probably, you know, interpret. Because I talked to James Walton the other day. The podcast just went up on Prepper Broadcasting Network. We talked about nuclear this, and I talked about bitter waters, because it's possible that nuclear water could make, you know, I mean, nuclear sure. explosion could yeah. make, or nuclear leak,
and there's
anything.
A Hopi prophecy that like foretells the Mississippi boiling from the amount of the gourd of ashes falling.
Right. But I can look at, you know, and we can look at any a lot of these things that are happening now could be considered intervention, God intervention, because if God said this is going to happen, and we told John the Revelator this is going to happen some 2,000 some odd years ago, and the things are slowly starting to happen now, you know, like the mark of the beast, like what is the mark of the beast? Well, it's the number of his name. What's the number of his name? Well, it's something that you want to have in your right hand. Who did nobody 2,000 years ago? What's he talking about? But now here right. we are. We see businesses putting chips in people's right hands, and they go about their normal life. Instead of swiping a credit card, pulling out cash, they rub their hand over the locks of the doors to access their business. They go to these vending machines, they run their
and
hand over
why
the scanners.
I was like, no. And that's honestly what fear, that's, well, I'm not going to say fear, because Jesus says in the Bible 365 times, do not be afraid. So that's one for each day. So he's got us covered there. But one of my concerns is that the chaos on the streets with the amount of illegals that just came into our country, the amount of potential terrorists, that kind of thing, if there was enough chaos on our streets that the average everyday person would start calling for guards on the streets because they don't want to protect themselves with their firearms, so they need to outsource that. So they would ask for armed guards on the street, and then that would give them an excuse to roll out their technology for all their surveillance tech that they would just love to roll out all over America. And that would be a way to have people actually ask for it themselves, instead of, you know, we're going to force this upon you. Everybody would be very, very against that. But if you can create enough chaos, then people would ask for it. And we just have to understand that our freedoms are so much more important than our security at any level. Because the minute you give up your freedom for security, you've now made that decision for every generation behind you.
Everything you just said was in my book, is in book one of my Tyrant series.
Right? That's why I love your books, too.
Oh, thank you. But yeah,
I was like, when we do audio dramas, I'm going to be Tori, because, yeah, I totally agree. And if we think that the Blue Hats wouldn't be here in a heartbeat, because... I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. Basically, our government has been sold out to China a while ago. And what they did was get into office and try to break us down and destroy us as fast as they could. And now we'll just see what happens before the 2024 election. But I'm of the opinion that election will never happen.
It could go either way, because if right now, if we go into wartime, the president has presidential powers, and he could postpone an election.
And then what does he do next? Exactly. National disaster. Then what happens, Doug? Because you taught me it.
Well, because in the event of a martial law, okay, you go back to the Barack Obama's executive order that he wrote, 13603, I believe it was. That in that executive order, it never defines national emergency. It just says in the event of a national emergency, and it's called the Preparedness Act. But in that act, it says many times about natural disaster or national emergency, but never says it exactly, never defines what national emergency is.
Right.
So any executive,
as soon as I hear those politicians say those words, I'm like, no,
because they're just buzzwords. All they do is say, because people are so willing, and we saw this with the COVID-19, with this vaccine thing.
People,
80% of all Americans just said, okay, and they went and got this thing injected into them, not knowing what was in it or anything.
I know. And Pfizer had, I'm sorry, but they had just been through one of the biggest criminal lawsuits ever.
And nobody cares.
Nobody cares. They turned around and put that stuff in their body anyway.
They're like, the government says it's okay. Someone go, and then everybody that doesn't do it is the bad guy.
Right? Oh, yeah. I didn't wear a mask at all.
If you remember at the time, they were telling you, they're saying, well, look at you. You're not wearing a mask. You're threatening us. You know, yeah, you're not vaccinated. You know, you're risking us. Well, if you're vaccinated, why are you worried about me?
Exactly.
But here we found out later on that getting vaccinated doesn't even stop you from spreading or stop you from getting it.
Or getting it.
Yes.
So what was the point?
Well,
I to just lessen the symptoms. The situation at all, because in 2008, I had really, really bad stomach issues going on. Things were going wrong inside of me. And I went from, you know, working out 5 hours a day in martial arts and whatnot, and working a 10-hour day with a 5-hour workout, to being in the fetal position on the sofa, and had doctors tell me it was because I wasn't taking enough pharmaceutical pills. I'm sorry, what? And then this other doctor called, said, because you're a female, you're a hypochondriac. I about knocked that dude's teeth down his freaking throat. I walked out of that doctor's office. I threw out every single pill he had prescribed me. And I found a doctor who did Eastern and Western medicine, was willing to look at the whole body. And it ended up that my gallbladder wasn't pumping properly. But in the meantime, what I went through, where they were just telling me, you know, you have to take this, you have to take that, you have to take this. No, I learned to say no. I've never been afraid to say no since I was a kid. And so when this whole situation came up, it was like, no, not me and not my family. Uh-uh.
So This I was a state employee back when this was this mandate first started, and I'm not like you. I'm not a sheep. I'm just not going to run out because the government says do this and do it, because there still needed to be studies. I still needed to see that, you know. And when later on I found out it wasn't even vaccine at all, right? It's mRNA. It was a genetic modifier, and the CDC had to go back and they had to change the definition of vaccine.
Yes. Yeah,
to make this qualify.
It was absolutely ridiculous. Plus, how many times are you sitting there watching TV and they're like, oh, well, if you took this, you could have a lawsuit. If you took that, you could have a lawsuit. If you did this, you could have a lawsuit. So I was just sitting there going, okay, well, how long is it till we're going to be watching these commercials that go, if you took this vaccination, you could have a lawsuit. But they can't do that, because if it's a vaccination, they have all kinds of rules set up by the government
indemnified.
That you can't even sue them.
Yep, they're indemnified.
Exactly.
So I took this medicine a long time ago because I had a pituitary cyst in my brain. I took a medicine that caused side effect. It got rid of the pituitary cyst, but it as a side effect, thickened my heart walls. Mm-hmm. So, and then I go on to see later on many people dying of myocarditis, right? Of an inflammation of the heart muscle. So I sit here and think, what would have happened if I would have been one of those sheep and said, okay, and here me with thickened heart muscles, go and takes this thing, and I have an inflammation. My heart would seize on me. I could have died. And so, you know, I knew that I made the right decision. I knew very early on, when every time the government mandates something, there's a huge red flag for me. Huge red flag.
Yep.
Because, it goes back to control.
It does. It always comes back to control. And so, yeah, I mean, my book series, that's what it's all about, is basically like the one side, Swenson's side, is the ultimate controller. They're gonna walk the United States into the future through a socialist regime where you have clear overpower of those people versus the people who are still just wanting to live free. And, you know, I show both sides of each. There's good and there's bad. Right. There's way more bad of the control side. But also on the freedom side, some of the towns turn into, like, you know, like brothels and pretty nitty gritty stuff because there's no law there to say you can't do that, you know, and not all the sheepdogs are out fighting the battle to try and keep everybody free. So you don't have the sheepdog. I say sheepdogs, these are a very special class of person. I mostly think of it as a male who is you and my husband and Chin Gibson and James, Dave, these men who want to protect their community, want to take care of their community, want all of their people gathered up in the middle so they can go do Overwatch, you know. So when I use the term sheepdog, it's in a very, very loving way because these are the essential, you know, men in our community who are willing to sacrifice themselves to take care of the whole. And when they're all off fighting battle, you're usually left with a class of people who, you know, are willing to do, they don't want to go battle and fight for the right things. So they're, what are they doing back in the town, the community? Probably not very good things.
There's a,
so, you know, you see that, you see those sides too.
As a police officer, I could tell you that there is, I've read a lot of books on, and there's the one book in particular called, I want to say it's called The Pack Mentality. And it talks about the wolves and it talks about the sheepdog. So to add to what you're saying about the sheepdog, a sheepdog, like the wolf, is a canine. The wolf is a very powerful creature, and the sheep that the sheepdog protect are, we'll just say they're civilians. They're just people who just want to live life. They're not really paying attention to the good, to the bad. They just know that they can lay down at night and know that somebody's out there protecting them. Well, that in comes the sheepdog. The sheepdog is also a canine like the wolf, but the sheepdog is designed to protect because he has a great capacity for violence, but he uses that capacity to protect the sheep,
right,
from the wolves.
Exactly.
Well, Sarah, we've been on for an hour. I just want to give you got about a minute or however long you want to tell us what you got going on right now.
Right now, everybody can head over to changingourseries.com, check out all my stuff there. Right now, I am doing a big Hollywood push. So, hopefully we're going to see Day After Disaster, the movie, or the Changing Earth series in a TV show within, you know, at least a couple of years. I've been beating at those doors for a while, so we'll see what happens if it's in within God's will. Like I said earlier, I would give up every dream I have for my family. So as long as my family's good, I'm good. But that's really been the main project beyond doing the audio drama. And the audio drama takes up a bunch of my time. Very fun project. Highly recommend people go check that out. You can download the Changing Earth audio drama at all of your podcast platforms, or just go over to changingearthseries.com and all of my stuff is over there. You can learn new survival information. I have pages and pages and pages of survival information. You can read epic stories. You can listen to epic stories. It's just a really cool website that I put together for my main hub.
I'm really excited. I can't wait to see what the future holds for you, Sarah. Congratulations on everything that you've done, all your hard work. I'm looking forward to seeing that go to the big screen or series or Netflix, whatever it goes to, just to know that I was a part of that in some way. It's really exciting.
Right. Yeah. It's a long process and it takes a lot of perseverance.
Well, hey, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. Hang on here for a second after I close out and I'll chat with you.
All right, perfect.
I want to thank everybody for listening to The Rising Republic with L. Douglas Hogan. I want everybody, if you can, to head over to Sarah F. Hathaway's Amazon page. And if you haven't purchased any of her books, go ahead and give them a purchase and head over to her Changing Earth podcast. And you can pick it up at her website or any of the major podcasting platforms. Download those. And hey, thank you for joining us. This is L. Douglas Hogan with the Rising Republic.